Once more under the breach, dear friend.
Let's close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting second hour of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And today is Saturday, September 13th. Friday the 13th fell on Saturday this month. And if this is the 13th and it's Saturday and it's 2014, then you can call in and you can ask us questions or make comments or whatever you feel like doing. Don't expect any intelligent, replies
right.
at all. But
don't
if
expect
you,
intelligence.
Right, but particularly if you're going to talk about something like sports.
Yeah, sports, we don't understand the
sports.
Athletes, we don't understand that whole concept.
I think I've concluded that sports has something to do with spores.
It's a mushrooms? Fungus.
Fungus, yes. It has something to do with fungus. And I'm still studying to figure out how a spore T, you know, like there's T cells in the blood.
Right.
It's a spore T. And because people do say it's really sporty.
Uh-huh.
So I'm working on that. We have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Welcome back, guys. Hope you enjoyed your vacation.
Aha! I brought the weather back from Colorado. Did you notice this morning?
I'm glad. I'd see you back. You should have came back a week ago.
I did. The weather was just a little slow to catch up with us.
Oh, there you go. Guys, that's about as Roth in the IRA on the last hour.
Yeah.
I'm having here by next April, I have to take my first RMD, required minimum distribution.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
When you take that, if I'm still working, and say I'm making $50,000 a year,
okay,
and I've got to take a $10,000 RMD, is that figured into my overall yearly tax and thrown up in a higher bracket, or is that $10,000 what I earned over the past 10, 15, 20 years, whatever?
Well, let me finish answering the question for the last hour and make it part of this answer, because the guy called in and he makes too much money to put money into a Roth.
If
you're single, you can't make more than $114,000.
We wanted to check this year's. I mean, the same thing is true. You can't do deductible IRA.
Right. Now, when you get money out of either income or from a retirement program, and with your required minimum distribution, that starts when you, the year after you've turned 70 and one half,
right,
because the government doesn't know how to look at birthdays. They have to round.
Well, no, they do to the nearest. It's nearest.
The nearest half.
That's why it's 70 and a half.
Well, that's what I mean.
Because it's 70 and a half, you're technically 71.
Because Congress is three-year-olds, because that's the last time that we had these half. You know, I'm 3.5 years old.
Oh, right.
Well, I'm 70.5 years old, and the Congress wants me to take money out, or they're going to take a bunch of it.
Got it.
When you take that money out, first off, you should take the money out. The amount that is required by RMD should be taken out, because the penalty for not taking that money out is half of the money that they would have required you to take out.
And they charge you income taxes on the half you didn't take out that they charged you.
Right. So when you look at the amount of money that actually goes to the government, I will thank you for building our roadways. Mm-hmm. I will thank you for, but you won't like it very much.
It is, in fact, going to be counted as income. Now, it's not earned income, but it's income to you.
So it could raise me into a higher tax bracket
for this year,
or for next year, I mean?
It could, but
it probably won't. Probably won't. Your RMD is probably going to be the smallest amount it will ever be in the first year, because they do it based on your life expectancy. So it will raise your income, but it won't raise it a lot. However, if you're still working and you don't need this money to live, and you expect that some other time in your life you might,
mm-hmm,
because you won't be working,
mm-hmm,
it's probably a good idea to put that money aside somewhere else.
And this is an interesting thing. If you're still working, you can take your entire RMD and you can put it in, if you presuming, it depends on how much, if you're married, for example, and you've got a $10,000 RMD, and since you and your wife would be probably over 55 and a half or 55 if you have an RMD, you could do two IRAs.
Or Roth IRA.
Or a Roth IRA.
You don't want to do an IRA if you're 70
and
a half.
The whole point is you could. The point is that you could eliminate the taxation on the thing by putting it into a deductible IRA if you're still working.
I don't think you can. I think that you're not allowed to contribute at that point. Unless it's a 401k.
If you're still working, I don't know. We'll look at that up. But at any rate, the point is, yes, you can.
I am still working. I'm 71, and I am still working. But I think if I draw that out and convert them into a Roth IRA, I've got to wait 5 years to make anything out of them. But I also have to pay the taxes up front, from what I understand.
Yeah, you do that through withholding. And there, in almost every case, wherever your IRA is and you're going to be taking the money out through an RMD, they're going to require withholding.
Yeah, you cannot make regular contributions to a traditional IRA after the year you reach 70 and a half.
Okay, so you can't contribute to a regular, but you can do the Roth IRA as long as you're still working. Yes, you do have to pay the taxes, and you take the after-tax amount and put it into a Roth IRA.
Yeah, and that's something that doesn't have RMDs on it. As long as you have earned income, you can put that turnaround, and it's not over the amount that we were talking about before. And for a married person, you've got to make $181,000 a year before they say, no, you can't do that.
The backside of
this, even though the money was technically earned in prior years and reflected on prior years' income taxes, although
if you're taking an RMD.
Income for this year.
If you're taking an RMD, it was not part of your income for prior years. It was deferred income.
It was deducted in that year as if you didn't make it because it was in the IRA or a 401k, wherever it was. Is this a 401k or an IRA that we're talking about?
It's an IRA. Thrift savings.
Okay. Thrift savings.
It's not IRA. Okay.
Okay. Are you still working for a government organization of some kind?
Yes.
Okay.
It is one of those things, very frankly, where we tell people generally about this point that they should consult with a tax professional, because, frankly, they change the laws on this often enough and the rules on this often enough that it is worth your time to have a qualified CPA, for example, to give you advice on what you're talking about.
So you were saying then that even though this $10,000 was technically earned in prior years, it was deferred to this year, and if I had to say a $50,000 a year income and I take a $10,000 RMD, then my
your income goes
income
up to 60.
Going to be reflected at 60,000.
Yes,
right. If you're actually making
a higher tax bracket,
well, it might, but it might not too. I mean,
I know.
The point is that, and again, this is not earned income. Earned income is treated differently than regular. I mean, this is why I say it's complicated.
Yeah, I'm just as a side note here, your adjusted gross income is different than the amount that you make every year, and you're paying taxes while you're working. So it may be that your deductions and so on mean you don't pay any more taxes out of your pocket. You just don't get any money back at the end of the year. It may be that you get money back at the end of the year, or maybe that you owe money at the end of the year.
You see, you're over 65, so you get an extra deduction because you're over 65. And it gets so complicated that nobody can really answer your questions off the top of their head without seeing all the information.
Right. Now, what I can say easily is that regardless of the tax, at the end of the time, you're going to have more money in your pocket than that you've already paid taxes on than you had before. And you may need that money later for retirement.
And you don't necessarily need to put it into a Roth IRA. You realize that, I'm sure.
Right. No, I wouldn't do that. Anymore. Not at my age. Like I said, you have to wait 5 years before you can start drawing out.
Yeah.
Once you establish a Roth. So I've got plans for it. I just was wondering if it was going to be reflected on my yearly income.
It will.
Okay.
Thanks,
guys. Appreciate it.
It's a tax deferral, and hopefully you're in a lower tax bracket today than you were when you earned it.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks for the call.
Thanks for calling.
And just to add to the confusion a little bit, let's tell the phone calls real quick. It's 773-1400 or 1-866-597-1400.
You're telling the phone calls that?
Yeah, we're telling them that. But just to add to the confusion, the guy that called in and was asking about the Roth IRA and what's the, you know, what are the limits?
Mm-hmm.
If you have earned income, generally you can put money in there. Except that if you're single and you make more than $181,000, it starts phasing out until you make $191,000.
This is a Roth?
I'm not single. I'm sorry. Married filing jointly.
Okay.
Married filing jointly, if you make $181,000, it starts phasing out. You can't put as much in. Until you make $191,000, you can't put any in. If you're single, you can make $114,000, and it phases out to $129,000. Okay, so there's a $14,000, $15,000 difference there versus the $10,000 difference if you're married.
Right.
If you're married and you decide not to file jointly, If you say, we got married, she has student loans, and if we file our taxes together, the student loan payment goes up. That's something I actually begin to see a lot of these days.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody has $80,000 in student loans, they get married, and the student loan folks, the federal and private side, expect that your husband or wife will now start paying extra money towards your debt rather than the other way around. That's a very big imbalance here. So if you say, all right, we've got a $500 a month payment, that'll be $1,000 a month once if we file jointly. So we're going to file, we're married, we have to file like we're married, but we're going to file separately. Well, now if you make more than $10,000, you cannot contribute to a Roth, either one of you.
You know what that is.
Why is that?
Because they want you to pay higher payments on the student loans.
Okay. So basically, if you get married in this situation, you're in a lot of trouble. So let's say if you're two single people, you're both fairly well off. You're making over $100,000 a year apiece. You're happy. You're both contributing to your Roths at your maximum level. You get married, neither one of you can contribute anymore.
Unless you file jointly.
No, even if you do, if you make over $100,000
each,
get married, now you make over $200,000, and the limit is $191,000.
So, about the same time, Congress was cutting the marriage penalty on income taxes. They were imposing new marriage penalties.
No, if you look at it again, the marriage penalty on income taxes is still there. It's just in the upper incomes. If you make $80,000 and you're single and you get married, your taxes drop. But if you each make $80,000 and you get married, both of your taxes go up.
You know, every time we start talking about things like this, I get a headache.
Yeah. And the reality is, and this is as clear as I can say it, the tax code is not fair. As far as I can tell, it was never intended to be fair.
It is. We really need an overhaul of the tax code. The only thing that scares me about that is
it might
wind up with something worse than we started with.
I mean, and I'm tempted to say, well, it'd be hard to be worse than this, but that's, you know, famous last words.
Well, you know, we went for a simplification of the tax code in 1987.
And it got simpler. It did.
And that was a large part of the cause of the crash of the stock market.
Right.
So,
right.
No, let's... You know, I think that's one of the reasons it's not the tax reform isn't going anywhere. It is
they
so
just,
amazingly convoluted. Among other things, there's a huge lobby of tax preparing corporations and firms
that make all their money
that
spending
lots
of hours.
There's lots and lots and lots of attorneys, and there's a whole bureaucracy.
Well, we make a lot of money in helping people plan their investment taxation concepts. So, and I'd be happy not making that money if they revised the tax. I would be happy if it was a simple thing where I was just saying, here's how you should invest your money, period. Not say, well, this money is treated differently than that money, and that money over there is even different because this money over here is purple even though it's green. Well, wait a minute. It's all the same stuff.
I long ago stopped trying to arrange my business affairs to minimize my taxes because I found it wasn't profitable. Anyway, you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach. The numbers in here are 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
And it's actually a whole lot of things.
Yeah, it's been a busy week.
That we could talk about. Let me say that I'm gonna give you the. I've got probably five or six stories that I could do here. But instead of doing those, I'm going to give you an overall picture of what's going on.
I love overall pictures.
And this one is
I like overalls themselves. Got the little straps over. It's like suspenders on my pants before. So let's get an overall picture.
Alan Greenspan spoke this week at KPMG, if I've got those numbers right. They're annual
numbers. They're not numbers. Those are letters.
The letters, right. Anyway.
Yes.
And he listed the reasons that the United States economy was not humming and moving along nicely. And, you know, the lead reasons are that basically construction isn't leading us out of this recession. And the reason it's not leading us out of this recession is because the getting a loan is difficult. There's a lot of people who would love to buy a house, but
by getting a loan,
got,
you mean getting loans
getting
from the bank, not being by yourself.
Right.
Okay. Right.
Okay. And a lot of people, the student debt is holding us back because a lot of people have too much debt for the banks to feel comfortable making mortgage loans to them. And the banks are really, really, really hesitant to make mortgage loans because they got hammered and are continuing to be hammered by the regulators. So that's probably the leading cause. But there's some other things that are floating around in there. One is that we have had a right now in the United States, the limiting factor on manufacturing is skilled labor. Manufacturing businesses in the United States cannot find enough skilled employees to expand. So when we talk about manufacturing jobs going overseas and in the size of the we actually have a larger manufacturing sector in absolute terms today than we've ever had before, but as a percentage of our economy, it's not very big. And the main reason is they simply can't hire anybody to do the jobs that need to be done. That's because, among other things, our education system is pretty bollocked up. We prepare everybody for college, but only a third of them go to college. And there's a taboo in our system of doing what the Germans do, which take about a third of their students and give them apprenticeship programs in businesses. And they also, by the way, wind up with a contract with the business. We have to work there a certain number of years. But, you know, those are all working against us. And that's the bad news. But here's the good news. It's a couple of pieces of good news.
Yeah, and let's come back to that education thing in just a minute.
Okay, I just wanted to touch on the fact that there's some reasons that this economic recovery is slow, and it's basically we are stagnated because people are scared. They're still unloading debt. They're still saving money. But here's the big but in this.
I don't want to see
of
a big
all
but.
The economies in the world, by far the healthiest one on the planet is the United States of America.
It's true.
The Europeans, by the way, the European Central Bank is in talks right now to start doing quantitative easing.
What we started 5 years ago.
And they are on the tip of sliding back into recession. There's certain rates that they look at on this is weird, on government swaps in Europe, and basically those rates are saying that future inflation will be between 0 and 1%, or maybe they'll go into negative interest rates. There are negative interest rate bonds floating around in Europe right now that assumes they're going to have deflation in the euro. These are very unhealthy things. The dollar has risen for 17 months. That's the longest run-up in the value of the dollar internationally since the 1990s. You start down the list of all the economic indicators in the world, and the United States comes out on top again and again and again. And I realize that things may be slow here, but they're terrible elsewhere. And I just wanted to say something that and it looks like at this point, and I hate to make predictions here, but it really looks like at this point we are still very much just emerging from a recession, but we are the healthiest economy in the world emerging from the recession, and it gets better. I want to say one more thing, and then I'm going to let Jake rip on here for a while. I wanted to get this good news out. And I know this sounds like bad news, good news. The S&P 500 stock index, after adjustment for inflation, is still not as high as it was in 2000. So if you hear somebody say, well, the stock market's high, it's in a bubble, we need to get out of the stock market.
Well, it's 14 years later, and it's still not quite as high.
It still hasn't reached the point it reached in 2000. Now, we've had tremendous increase in earnings.
So calculate for earnings, it's really low.
Yeah, and so these are all excellent things. And you want to roll inside? I got one more thing I want to say here real quickly.
Yeah, go ahead.
And you're going to like it.
Oh, I hope so.
I'm not advertising for the iPhone 6 because there'll be other cheaper ways of doing this in the future.
Mm-hmm.
But you can write this one down, too. I'll make a prediction here. The advent of the Apple Watch and the iPhone 6, I think, will be as significant as the original iPhone. And the reason I say that is both the Apple Watch and the iPhone 6 have the capability, and Apple is pushing really, really hard and funding through Visa and MasterCard, I'm getting to this, a system where you can take your Apple Watch and bump it against the equivalent of a card reader as you check out someplace and pay.
You can do that with your phone already.
You can do it, but the point is Apple is coming in with Visa and MasterCard
right.
to fund the devices at the merchant's level.
Yeah, yeah. And
they're working through an existing system, and what they want is very, very simple. It's less than 1%. It's like a fraction of 1% that Apple will get every time somebody bumps an Apple Watch or an Apple or an iPhone 6.
Yeah, there is a the payment methodology.
It will,
revolution
it will replace
has
money.
And this came from PayPal. PayPal began this. So go back to Elon Musk, who's the guy that kind of began this concept. And paying anywhere and having a little thing that you could swipe a card on your phone was one step removed from having the card on the phone and you just bump phones together or bump it against a machine or transmit it. It's a really cool concept. Apple's not the only one doing it, but I think you're right.
But the point is that Apple is working through the major card companies, specifically Visa and MasterCard.
So is Google.
But they've got both. A lot of people have been trying this, but nobody has been able to get Visa and MasterCard to sign on wholesale.
Google has.
And fund it.
Well, when you say fund it, what do you mean?
Meaning that assisting the merchants in getting the hardware set up. It has never caught on, okay? It's not popular. It is not
a big wave, you're right. It is going to be...
The fact that Apple is throwing its entire corporate might behind a system associated with a specific piece of hardware is liable, I think, to be the game changer. The watch is the key to it.
Yeah, I watched the announcement, and I'm aware of what's out there already and the wearables that are coming out from the different manufacturers that are already out that have a lot of the same functionality, some cases more functionality than the Apple's version. And I see what Apple did as we're also doing this to a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm. But they're putting a lot of money behind it. That's the point.
Yeah, I recognize that. And there are some changes that are happening now, and it's happening across the whole spectrum in the industry of phones and watches of being able to pay directly from your phone or watch rather than having to pull the card out. And it's not that different. So I think you are absolutely correct there. That is going to be the future. That's basically what we'll do, and eventually we won't even have it as an item. It will be part of us.
And this is interesting. Apple is targeting, initially, a very unusual sector. They're targeting the cash sector. They discovered that people, even very affluent people who could afford to buy an iPhone 6 and a watch, do their smaller transactions below $10 and $20. The majority of them are done with cash.
Right.
And what they're trying to do, they're going after that part of the market. Now, that sounds really strange, but their whole philosophy is right now, if we can get wealthy people to spend all of their small cash purchases as a bump simply so they don't have to fish in their pocket and haul out their wallet,
right.
It will then migrate up, whereas the other guys have tried to start from the top and move down. And, you know, you're shaking your head like you don't think this is going to happen.
Well, no, I'm not shaking it that I don't think it's going to happen. I think that they're not the only ones targeting that market.
Yeah, but they're big, and they are...
I'm not disputing that. I'm not arguing with you.
I think this is the tipping point. What I mean.
Okay. Their announcement at the setting that there was a big deal. But if you look at each point in the announcement, they're saying, yes, we're doing this too. And I wanted to make that clear in case people thought you were giving a ringing endorsement of Apple.
No, I'm not giving it. I'm just simply saying.
There are a lot of other people doing it as well, and eventually it's going to be just the norm.
Well, the point is that there were smartphones out there before the iPhone. But when the iPhone came out, it tipped the balance, and now everybody else is coming out with smartphones.
Yeah, the reason why, and this goes back to the fundamental nature of why the iPhone became so big so fast, is because its interface was easier, its feel and design was better. this was kind of like what happened when Dell came out first, and it was the only one that was able, you could just go online, or you could call them and you could get a custom computer and it would show up at your door and it would be exactly what you wanted instead of what was on the shelf. Eventually, everybody was doing that. People kept using Dell, and Dell would come out and say, hey, we have a new way of doing something, and people would say, oh, that's great. But at this point, Apple, everything that it's talking about has been commoditized. It's not the only one doing any of these things. And because of that, Amazon's doing it, Google's doing it, Microsoft's doing it with each of their versions of a phone. Amazon's coming out with this brand new thing that has wearables, and Google has the wearables out already. The Kindle Fire concept for Amazon is, you know, incorporating all these things. Apple's got an uproad battle. They've got to fight against a pretty crowded marketplace now. But you are absolutely right. The future is going to be, and this may be the tipping point, this is when everybody's saying, we're doing this, of having a phone or a watch or a ring, because the ring is the next thing out, where you just wave your hand over the thing, and that's you paying. That's it. That's pretty amazing. It's going to be efficiency as far as reaching in your pocket. You'll also be able to look at, you know, different apps, so to see exactly what happened there, instead of having to wait a couple of days to see if the check cleared, it's immediate. All right, so I wanted to go back to education. And this is something that I think is one of your favorite topics as well. I was asked quite a bit of questions in the last several days about student loans and about what are we going to do, you know, the people are having babies and they're looking ahead at 18 years out trying to figure out how they're going to pay for college. And there's the Texas Tuition Promise Fund, which is the new version of the Texas
Tomorrow
Fund. And that the concept of you pay in and you buy units at today's price and they're guaranteed to be the same, you know, number of units in the future when your kid goes to school. The whole system of secondary education is completely inefficient. If you do an online search for MIT free lectures, you'll find that you can get all of the lectures that you need to pass an entire degree in electrical engineering or chemistry or any number of other chemical engineering or any number of other things just by going to YouTube videos and watching them. Now, it's not accredited. You still have to take the tests, but it doesn't cost anything to do that. You can watch them all for free. You could sit at a library and just do that all day. And yet, to get into any college is a difficult process with a lot of money involved, while the lectures are available for free. So what you're really paying for is the professor watching you take a test. That seems to be broken. I mean, if somebody with a PhD watching you take a test is why you're paying tens of thousands of dollars, when you can go to a testing facility and get the same thing done. Now there's that interaction that you can get with a professor. And I don't think that that is something that you can replace online at this point, although you could do it one-on-one. You would have to pay for that. That makes sense. What we have right now is a debt system, a huge amount of subsidized debt that is available for any student going into college, because the United States government and the people of the United States have said that a college education is good for you. The numbers back that up. A college education means that you're a lot less likely to be unemployed, a lot less likely to be unemployed in a downturn. So we have this great system of schooling that allows you to get paid more and so on. And then we have this horrible system of debt that the government is willing and able to give you large amounts of money with basically no collateral to go to a school without defining what it is that you're going to be studying at the school. Just, yeah, you can go to school. Here you go. Here, have some debt. That sounds a lot like what was going on in the housing bubble, where people weren't being asked what they were planning on doing to pay the debt back. And when you consider what we were talking about just a few minutes ago, where people that are getting married now have to assume the debt of their spouse. In Texas, we kind of go, well, of course, it's a community property state. You, of course, you would take that as well as the other property that they own. Well, that's not the case in every state. And in Texas, it's kind of a special treatment. In Texas, if you get married and file separately, you still get treated the same way as any other state for the debt purposes. So it's a federal debt, not a state debt. I know I'm kind of going on about this. Singularity University is worth looking up. Peter Diamandis and Ray Kurzweil founded that. It's a university that's not accredited in California that people generally go to after they already have a degree.
It's not accredited and it's in California. It's just not that it's not accredited in California.
Right. It's not accredited and it's in California.
Right.
Correct. So people that go there generally already have a degree, but they're not doing well for whatever reason. They go to this place, they have an idea, they start building on that idea. It's basically a college for entrepreneurs in the tech industry or in any industry. How do we get started? What do we need to do to market? What paperwork needs to be filled out? They have people that do that in classes with you. And then at the end of the session, which is not cookie cutter, sit down in a class with a bunch of other people and get told the same thing. It's much more one-on-one. When they leave, the vast majority of them have funding to start a business from people that are standing up waiting in line to come in and give these people money because they have ideas. They know where they're going to go, and that's the future of education. It's rather difficult in my mind to think of the Texas tuition, the promise fund that's out there right now, and say in 18 years you should have this stuff all put together and ready to go, because we don't know if technology, if the internet is going to come in and completely disrupt the way the college system works. If you can get that tuition for a lot less money, like you can do with credit cards now, because 30 years ago to get a credit card was very difficult, and now everybody has them, and soon it's going to be you bring your watch or your ring or your phone across and then you paid for things. Technology comes in and completely disrupts this industry, and credit cards, there were huge amounts of money being made because those pieces of plastic were so rare and people were willing to pay a huge amount of money just to use it so that they could pay money on top of that to pay for the thing that they wanted to buy. The same is true in what's going on in college. People are willing right now to pay a lot of extra money in interest so that they can go to college, but they haven't really defined what it is that they want out of the college in a lot of cases, and they kind of wind up with a job somewhere that they are now locked into, because if they lose their job, they can't make their payments. They can put it on deferral, but then every week, every month, they watch that balance grow. There is a big weight in our economy that is an inefficiency in the system. When there is abundant cash available for schools, schools will raise their prices. It's pretty simple. It's supply and demand. There's a lot of cash available to be used for schools. So schools have no problem raising the price of education. There you go. That was my...
We need to do some commercials. And we'll be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach.
Did you know...
And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And the telephone numbers in here are 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
And we haven't talked about stock market.
We should do that.
The stock market, let's see, what did the stock market do? it went down for the week. Like the S&P 500 was down 1.10%. And year-to-date, though, the S&P 500 is up 7.42. That's one of those things, by the way, that as I was looking through reports that we do for our clients, that we that I saw, that I was kind of surprised because our year-to-date numbers were, our one-year numbers were higher with the reports that we did for a couple, before I went on vacation. When I came back, they were lower. And by the way, that's one of those really strange things. The problem is that a year ago, the stock market was had run up at this point. But what we're seeing is a one-year, a 52-week return on the S&P 500 of about 18%, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average about 10.5%, the NASDAQ about 23%. Those are excellent. We're going through a bit of a doldrum in the market right now because everybody is waiting to hear. Very frankly, the reason the market has turned down recently a little bit is because the economic news is too good and everybody's scared that the Federal Reserve is going to raise interest rates. Like, duh. But all in all, we've had a very good month. We've had a very good year, an exceptionally good year in the market with a lot of people getting double-digit returns. It depends on, of course, how much you're invested in the market and how much you're invested somewhere else. But we're really doing very, very well. And we're doing very, very well against just about everywhere else that we look to. You know, you were talking about education a minute ago.
Right.
There's a little interesting story. 155,000 Americans in 2013 had their Social Security benefits cut because of student debt.
Ouch.
The majority of those were disabled. People who are on SSI. People who are sufficiently disabled that they can't work.
All right. There's a new program that came out that said that, you know, if you're disabled and you can get a discount on your student loans, or you can, or they can forgive them completely if it's a permanent disability. Mm-hmm. But then the IRS steps in and says, well, that's income. So if you had $80,000 of student loans and you got this new program and it said, you know, instead of taking away from your Social Security disability payment that's going to work towards you, we're going to forgive that debt. Well, then the IRS comes in and says, well, you owe income taxes on that $80,000.
Yeah, well, there's a...
Ouch.
There's another little... The key to this, by the way, folks, and the thing I wanted to bring up that I think is very important, and I realize a lot of our listeners are not in the position of taking out student loans, but they may have influenced some of the people who do. And that is, borrowing money to go to college to get a degree without that degree being valuable in the workplace is a waste of money. Not only is it a waste of money, in many cases, parents and students wind up heavily, heavily, heavily in debt to get a college degree in something that will not result in a good-paying job. That's a hard thing for people to accept, but if you, as I have done, if you ask people who are planning to go to college, who are planning to borrow the money to go to college, high school students, and I ask them quite a lot, are you planning to go to college? And they said yes. And I ask them, do you have the degrees? And they say yes. And I said, what are you going to get into? The number of them that are going to be veterinarians is pretty astonishing. I've got to say.
It's like a marine biologist years back.
But we also get the marine. We're still getting the marine biology, by the way. We're getting the people who are already in college and have no idea what their degree program is going to be. They're just going to go to college. And unfortunately, both online and in the physical bricks and mortar schools, the easy courses and the easy degrees that the schools have set up to get money very commonly do not translate into jobs that pay enough money that a person can make a living and pay on the student loans.
Right.
It's a hard fact. TSTC or something similar, some place where you can get a technical education in how to do something very specific. That's offered through the Temple College system. It's offered through Texas State Technical College. It's offered in a lot of places. Probably the majority of the people who are attending the University of Texas, and certainly a majority of the people who are getting online degrees, unless you're going to work for the government where they just pay you for the degree, and I think that's going to go away too.
And that, by that, we're talking about firefighters, teachers, that sort of thing. You can, after you worked a certain amount of time, there's programs that help pay that back.
But the issue is that
municipalities can't pay for it anymore.
The issue is that for most government employees at any level, simply getting a degree or a master's degree or something gives them an automatic pay raise. Unfortunately, in the real world, it doesn't work that way.
Right, and you actually have to increase your productivity.
And there are several major trends going on that are likely to persist for quite a long period of time. And one of them is that the percentage of our economy that results from government spending has been shrinking. And when I say government spending, I'm talking about everything from the dog catcher to the Defense Department. And that is going to be, if we're not going to raise taxes, and we've kind of concluded we're not going to raise taxes, then the way we get ourselves stabilized financially is to reduce spending. Well, since the third rail, of course, that's another thing that Alan Greenspan talked about, Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security are untouchable.
Yeah.
As those numbers rise, the government will have to employ fewer people. And there will be less money going to local governments as time goes by. We still don't want to raise taxes, and that means that the governments will either collapse or they'll get more efficient. That's hard creative destruction, but the reality is, in a practical sense, just having a degree doesn't have a lot of value. And I can tell you this as working in a small business and trying to hire people. Basically, we've had, you're going to think this is crazy, but I've seen a lot of evidence of this going on. The fact that a person has a master's degree now in a course that doesn't require a thesis to be written can in many cases indicate that a high school graduate may be a better employee. And this is in clerical, high-thinking skill jobs. And why would the high school graduate be the better employee? Because we can train a high school graduate. And this is the thing I talked about earlier about the third rail in education is you don't talk about vocational education, you don't talk about apprenticeships.
Right.
But the reality is,
because everybody wants to think of their kid going to college.
Yeah, going to college and getting a great job. And that's still possible if you take a hard series of courses. And when I say a hard series of courses, it's the difficult courses that get you good jobs. And it's the difficult majors that get you good jobs. And we've seen an awful lot of people in our business who applied who we would actually like to hire. But we couldn't hire them because their salary requirement was so high because of their student debts.
Yeah, when you talk about having to pay $800 or $1,000 a month or $1,500 a month for student loans, that's in a lot of cases more money than they're paying in rent. It's more than how much it costs to have a house. They have to have a house as well, otherwise they're living on the street. You got to make money to pay for both, and that's tough. It's one of the major friction pieces on the recovery of our economy.
Yeah, and people can't afford to buy houses because they're paying off student loans. Now, we'll get through this, presuming we don't keep racking up. We got $1.1 trillion worth of student loans. Oddly enough, and I don't agree with this proposition, by the way, the Obama administration just made some moves last week to make it easier for people, to get easier for parents with poor credit records
to get loans.
To get loans for their for their children.
Like, we haven't heard that one before.
The difficulty here is, as much as I like the idea of people going to to school to become better educated.
We love that idea.
The problem is right now our school system is responding to parents and students who want to get good grades easily.
There's another piece
rather
here.
Than to employers who want to have highly qualified, highly trained people.
This is great. Part of the reason why the colleges are saying we're charging more is because the ratio of students to professors, and they want to keep it at a certain level. The highest rate of unemployment in people with college educations are people with PhDs.
Well, I know this is true in Austin.
There are a lot of PhDs out there that want jobs at academic institutions, and they want jobs in the private market. The colleges are not hiring. Colleges are not hiring and haven't been for about 5 years. They have not. You got a job as a PhD at a college.
Particularly if you got tenure.
If you got tenure, you're not moving. You don't want to go anywhere because unless you know something weird happens and you publish something and somebody gives you an offer and you go, oh, this is better than what I had. Trying to look for a job as a PhD in academia is almost impossible. While they're raising the rates on the students coming in because they don't have a good ratio of students to PhD, and it's because the money's available to pay for it.
And I think that is one of the more serious mistakes. You're going to know a governmental policy that is a serious mistake, but that everybody loves.
Right.
It is the federal government loaning $1.1 trillion. By the way, that is not included as part of the national debt when they calculate it.
Right.
But it's still there. The United States, we've removed it from the corporations, the federal government did. Now they're doing it straight out, loans straight from the federal government.
And in fact, if you have a loan from the government, you actually are reducing the amount of debt that the government has. Because if they've got $1.1 trillion owed to them, that's $1.1 trillion that they don't owe on the other side because they're assuming that you're going to pay it back. So the debt of the government actually goes down by the amount of money that is being loaned out to students.
And we're about out of time for the Personal Wealth Coach today on Saturday, September 13th. It's been a good day simply because it got cool today.
It is beautiful out.
If you would like to contact us off the air, and we are in the wealth management business, if you have a portfolio big enough that it's important to you, and you need you would like to have professionals helping you manage it, then we're the people to talk to. And the telephone numbers, you can give us a call off the air, either that or talk about the show. You can call voicemail right now at 947-1111, or
you can reach us toll-free at 1-800-914-7526. That's 1-800-914-PLAN. You can email us at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com, or you can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com. There's a contact us there, and we have podcasts available. If you want to listen to us, you still have sanity left. You won't after that.
KTEM AM, Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood. Proud to broadcast to the largest military post in the free world. News Radio 1400 KTEM.